somebody gave me a really great constraint. She said, choose something that you would be proud of, even if it fails. That constraint was very powerful. Because all of a sudden, for me, all the Salesforce optimization ideas go out the window. And you have to think about what you really care about. And it went back to how I was raised about my education.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. David Rozier is the CEO and co-founder of MasterClass, the online learning platform where you can learn to shoot a basketball from Steph Curry, filmmaking from Martin Scorsese, or photography from Annie Leibovitz. MasterClass is slick and highly produced, carrying classes from the biggest name in their respective industries. Like all incredible startups, the story of MasterClass and Dave Rozier is a fascinating one. It taps into his love for education, his appetite to take a risk by leaving the corporate world, and of course, a passion for entrepreneurship. I recently caught up with David inquiring about how his early days formulated his mind set toward success and his love for learning. I started by asking David about where he came from, because all of a sudden I saw MasterClass and it was this incredible, incredible company. And I'll have to be honest, years ago, I thought about the idea well before the technology was there. I never created the business, and I was so intrigued when I actually saw what David had built and what he had done so well.
That is a deep question. I'm from Los Angeles. My grandparents on one side met in Auschwitz, of all places in the world to find love. I was partly raised by them. The other side of my family that helped me raise me to escape the war, that had most of their almost everybody they knew was killed. I was raised in part by them. I also stutter, and it was much worse as a kid. And so I was raised in Los Angeles by by grandparents and parents that had seen the worst in life, but refused to let how I stutter did not allow me to use that as an excuse to not do something. And they also instilled in me that the only thing that someone can't take away from you is your education. And that was like instilled from day one. And so I think I extrapolated that to mean I don't want to be on my deathbed and hopefully a long period of time and not have had tried to make the world a tiny bit better. And that was the world that I was, you know, raised in, brought up in.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really interesting. We had a guest on the show a few months back, Daniel Lubetsky from Kindbar. And his situation, his father was in the Holocaust. And really what was super interesting is he called it Kindbar because even after his father had gone through all of that, the most evil things you can imagine, he still would have this kindness in his heart for even the people that kind of put him in those positions. And I just want to say on that note, it's really interesting that you mentioned this. I'm reading a book right now that it was recommended to me. It's the boy who followed his father into Auschwitz. And reading about, you know, I really have stayed away from that. I had relatives too that were not relatives, father's cousins. And when reading through this and just seeing the awfulness of this, it's so debilitating and so awful and difficult. And I love the fact that, you know, your grandparents, they told you like your education and never take it was. It's almost they turned it into a positive for you. And it seems like that helped you kind of start your trajectory into life. Is that right?
Yeah. For them, I don't think the positive part was they appreciated life a lot. And nothing was as bad as what they had been through. So anything else that you suffer, you find difficult in life, put in perspective. But also, I think, I don't know if it was from them or, you know, it was, I was a curious kid and I still am. And I asked lots of questions. And I think one of the things I learned was in most parts of the educational system, that is not encouraged. I mean, you are encouraged to sit in a chair from 9 to 4, to not talk, If you have a question, to raise your hand. And when you ask a question, they don't want your point of view. It's just like a clarification. And so I grew up with that in school, but at home, the expectation was I was supposed to have a point of view. I was supposed to be discussing it. And so there was a part of that from day one that I think has still exists at Masterclass, was part of the inspiration for it. But I think what also was part of the inspiration for it was I love to learn, but I did not like school. And I got in trouble in school a lot for asking questions. And how do you think about how this kind of divide of I love to learn, but I don't like school, but there are teachers that have changed my life. And trying to reconcile all that, I think, was part of the mixing pot of, you know, the idea.
Yeah, I see. I love it. I see kind of now where how this has come about to a certain degree. But where did the idea come from? And when did it come from? And what were you doing prior to doing Masterclass?
Yeah, so I was working in venture capital. So I was investing. I missed creating. And I went to my boss one day and, you know, I was like, hey, like, I don't think this life's for me being an investor. I miss building. I want to do that. And, you know, he pushed me on it a little bit. Are you sure you really want to do? And we talked about it some more. And he's basically like, why don't you come back to me with a proposal? And I was like, huh. I was like, so I came back to him. I was like, okay, what if I work on ideas, you invest? I don't know what the idea is yet. And he's like, okay, deal. So, you know, he invested. It was just under $500,000. And I mean, it was basically, you go think of an idea. Now, that is amazing. And it would have only been possible because I worked for him for a while. He is an investor. He runs a fund, right? But it's terrifying because I realize it's a once in a lifetime chance that I don't want to mess up. And there's no structure in the day, but I can't complain about it to anybody because who in their right mind doesn't give me an ounce of sympathy? Nobody is going to. And I then really started thinking, okay, what are trends happening in the world? What are my own needs? What are things I really care about? And, you know, I was trying different ideas and experimenting. And somebody gave me a really great constraint. She said, choose something that you would be proud of, even if it fails. That constraint was very powerful because all of a sudden for me, all the Salesforce optimization ideas go out the window and you have to think about what you really care about. And it went back to how I was raised about my education. And I remember I was in second grade and after school, I would stay with my mom's mom, my grand, because my folks both worked. And I remember I was dropped off her house one day. So I don't know, you're 8 or 9 years old in second grade, somewhere around there. And I was complaining to her about all the math homework I had, which obviously I didn't have a lot because I'm like in second grade. My grandma tells me she has a story she wants to tell me, which as a second grader is, I mean, the last thing you want to hear. And so she tells me a story. So she was 16 years old. She was living at the time in Krakow, Poland. Her and her mom go on a family vacation. Dad's going to join, stays home a couple extra days, finish work. While they're on vacation, the Nazis invaded. They killed her father, took everything. She flees to New York City. Only job her and her mom gets is on a factory floor, like on a production line. They are working side by side. My grandma decides she wants to become a doctor, finds every medical school in the state of New York, writes, applies by hand to every single one of them, gets a no from every single one. Keeps working factory, applies again to every single one of them, again, gets a no from every single one. She starts calling the deans of admissions and saying, why am I not getting in? They all hang up on her, except for this one guy who's like, I'll be honest, you have 3 strikes against you. You're a woman, an immigrant, and you're Jewish. Hangs up. She keeps working in the factory, applies again next year to every single one. She gets into one and becomes a pediatrician. And I'm staring at her. This is like heavy stuff to be hearing from, like, literally just whining about homework. And my grandma tells me, look, David, the only thing that someone can't take away from you is your education. And I realized, I have this one chance. I want to build something people can't take away from others. I want to try to make it possible for anybody in the world to learn from the absolute best. And that's how it began.
I love that. I mean, that is completely powerful. And it's so hard to fathom. It's just hard for me. I know this is a show about entrepreneurship, but it's so hard to fathom that you could be out on a boat and with your child. And I mean, some of the things, as I told you, reading this book right now and reading about that were the most evil things you could ever think of. And to be able to come out of that, and especially for her to be like, I'm not going to give up. And of course, so much of the anti-Semitism at that time when she was here in the US and being a female, I mean, it's amazing she went through that. And I can see how that was ingrained in you about education. And I want to get back to your boss said, everyone says, and I'm curious if you believe this because you did this for a while, you invest in the person, not the idea. And I assume your boss was a pretty smart guy and he knew he had something special here and said, look, go figure out the idea. I'll give you this money. It's not a gift, right? So what was that like when he gave you the money and kind of the expectations?
Yeah. I mean, I think, look, I'm no expert in this, but I think at the seed stage investment level, you're investing a lot in the person because there's not much else. Now, I was more behind than most, right, at that stage. But somebody once told me that the great entrepreneurs find the TAM. They find the market. And you have a kernel of an idea or a need, but you have to be very good at reading and understanding where is the business. And I think the other part is we are trained throughout our lives to seek praise and acceptance. And I mean, our educational system is designed for that with grades and merit badges or whatever, all that stuff. Entrepreneurship is a rejection of those norms. You're basically doing an idea that 99% of people are going to think is dumb or impossible. Because if it wasn't, they would do it. And so you have to prepare yourself for that. It is a change in how you live life. Because all of a sudden, most people aren't going to be impressed by the things that you are trying to do anymore. They will be once it becomes a hit. Then all those people that said the idea was impossible now tell me, I told you it was going to be a great idea. Right? But at the time, everybody was saying it's impossible. So I actually have come to believe that entrepreneurship is like you are literally believing in the impossible and that you and a small group of people can achieve the impossible. Now, look, you can't most of the time. And we all fail most of the time. But you only got to hit it once or twice for it to work.
It's so true. I love how you just put that. We had this guy, Will Ahmed, on our show a couple of weeks ago. He started this company called Whoop.
Yeah, sure. Will is a great guy.
Big, super, super good guy. And he said that he literally had over 1,000 people. He said there was at least 1,000 people who told them that this idea would never work, or they'd have ideas how to change it. And it's so funny you bring that up because I think as an entrepreneur, that's the hardest part is being able to kind of phase that out of what people are telling you, focus on what you need to do, be persistent. And then when you get knocked down, because you're going to get knocked down, right? You got to get back up. So for you, you get this opportunity and tell me about it because you said it's scary because it is scary because all of a sudden it's just you and you're thinking, I imagine this could be a success. This could be a failure. That had to be, was there any hesitation at all?
Of course. I mean, every day. And then you start saying, okay, well, if I fail at this, then that means I'm never going to be an entrepreneur. Does that mean and then as time passes, did I just waste 6 months, a year on this idea? Will I ever be able to get a job again? Like, then you start to doubt yourself, yeah. Right? I mean, I think one of the keys or one of the things I think is really helpful in the entrepreneurship path is to have a great therapist.
I will tell you 100%. They might say there's business coaches now and life coaches, but if you have a good therapist, especially a good cognitive therapist where you can reframe your mind to actually think positive. I'm very much built, you know, and it's funny, even I've built businesses and have been successful on the third one. And I have my mind frame just goes back to that it's not going to work or there's the negative. And it's so difficult to overcome that, especially, and I hate to keep bringing up other stories, but we had a guy on the other day too from WorkHuman, Eric Mosley. And he was talking, he's built his business into a $1 billion business, but he was talking about how he was riding up the elevator with one of his sales guys to a big client. And he gets a call right before he gets on the elevator that this huge deal that was going to make their quarter, make the business, that whole thing fell through. And now he's going up and pitching this other client just on survival. And just to be able to have to like, change your mindset and as an entrepreneur and bring back that optimism. Because for me, it's so easy when I get this negative feedback from others, from clients, to just, it's fight or flight, right? And you gotta fight.
I think the trick, I think there are two. One is, if you can pick an idea that at the core you love. So for masterclass, I love to learn, always did. But when I look back, like I organized speakers to come at college. I did all the time. After college, I did that at Stanford. And when I was getting my MBA, I did a lot of that. And so you're combining things that like you already love, which is going to help you in the darkest times, right? Because you're like, look, because if it's something you don't care about, when the dark times come, you're like, kind of screw it. But if there's like, no, look, I really love this. This is what I love in life. It, that really helps. The other part is there are times where you have to fake it until you make it. And you never lie. You never not tell the truth. You never be an ass to anybody. But internally to yourself, you have to focus on the positive. So if you just had a really rough day at work and you have to go pitch something, you have to go think of all the positive things about the company, that back to that core idea that you love, and you focus on that to get yourself hyped up. At least that's kind of the like trick for me, right?
Yeah, I know. I love that. I think it's so difficult to do and so hard, but I agree with you wholeheartedly. I've always picked businesses I'm passionate about that I knew I can get up and do out of bed. I wish I loved finance. I wish I loved that. I started on, you know, some part of me says that because, oh, in finance, you can do so much and make so much money in this. And one of the best things that early on, I just was like, you know what? And the funny thing is I was sitting at Lehman Brothers and everyone was saying, stay at Lehman Brothers. It's the safe bet. And of course, we know what happened to Lehman Brothers. And I was just reading about people in the newspaper who were in sports and entertainment. And I was like, you live once. I want to do something I love. And just like you said, that's what on the darkest days, if I'm getting out of bed talking about trips to the Super Bowl or speaking engagement with Tom Brady or whatever it might be, that to me was what excited me. And I think you're so right in that respect that you need that. And that's what I love about what you did, because you took kind of something that was true to your heart from what you learned from your grandmother and that education piece. And then you took that and you realized just how you learned in school. And it's so backwards, as we all know.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Ready to take your business to the next level, but need guidance and inspiration to get you there? Entrepreneur Insider can help. Our membership-based program provides insight and advice from industry experts with our exclusive benefits. And what do you get? Well, if you join today, enjoy premium articles, videos, webinars, a weekly newsletter, and an ad-free experience. Plus, get a free one-year subscription to Entrepreneur Magazine. So don't miss out. Become an Entrepreneur Insider for just $5 per month today to start boosting your business knowledge and growing your brand. Visit entrepreneur.com/insider to unlock your access today.
And we're back.
How does the actual idea come about?
So I don't believe it's ever like as smooth as we all like to believe. So it comes in kind of chunks. So, you know, what I did was I posted an ad on Craigslist in farm towns up and down the state. And I offered to pay people to just talk to them about their schooling. So I want to talk to people that were not like me. And just want to get all different walks of life and just hear about it. And you started to hear it about it. And I, you know, tons of notes. I still have a bunch of those notes. And you know, you start hearing people being ripped off on their education, people making bad choices, people still wanting to learn after school, right? You start getting these themes that kind of, you know, are percolating in your head for a while. And then, you know, what I believe strongly is like you mock stuff up and you put it in front of people. And anytime you do that, most people will be like, oh yeah, I like that. And you're like, no, like you want somebody to be like, wait, can I buy that? Or you know, like a question I'll ask, is this something you're willing to pay for? And you know, I would hear lots of no's, no's, no's. At one point I remember somebody said yes. I was like, oh really? He's like, well, I mean, it's just because I feel bad for you already. And you're like, oh.
That's awful.
And so like, you know, you keep iterating on it until people are like, ooh, that is awesome, right? Like, can I sign up for that? And I believe that every business idea has a couple of like, think of it as a science experiment. There's a couple of hypotheses that have to happen. For us was, or am I going to be able to sign the level of folks of a Martin Scorsese, of a Steph Curry, of a Christina Aguilera? Am I going to be able to sign those, right? Two is, am I going to be able to make classes with them that are actually good, right? Three, are people going to actually want to even buy it? And then fourth, all the economics and can it scale? And you don't have to do those all in order. You can do multiple ones at the same time. So I'm working to sign some of the top folks in the world. That took a long time, but I could still run tests on other things, from surveys and polls, doing mock-ups in front of things, you know, doing test classes with my parents, right? Like, you can test those hypotheses. And so before you spend a lot of money, actually.
Well, when I saw Masterclass and coming from, you know, a background of events and experiences, and I was like, oh, I love this idea. That's genius. I was shocked at the level of person that you had teaching these classes. And how were you able, I know you mentioned it's kind of like you're doing a lot of things at once and figuring it out, but how did you get, and I forget who some of the originals, you'll probably tell me, but like Scorsese may have been one of them. Like, how were you able to get those folks on board? Because I knew personally that Martin Scorsese, if I wanted to get him to appear at an event for me for some company X, it was $250,000 for the hour. Like, you didn't have a lot of capital. How did that all work?
It was cold emails and like grit and grind. But like with the process, you know, and that was probably the scariest part, because that took like, I could prove all the other hypotheses before I could prove that one. But it was a lot of, okay, you know, I read a sales book, I remember, because like, I was like, okay, what? And like, you know, the first thing almost any sales book will tell you, right, is like, think of what they need and want. And you're like, huh, I've been pitching what I want.
Yeah.
What is it they need and want? Okay, well, like, I'm not going to be able, it's not going to be money, because I'm never going to be able to win on that, right? So it can't be money. Okay, well, some of them, I mean, they're going to, at the core, they're going to have to want to teach, right? They're going to have to want to share, right? That gift. Otherwise, it never works. Two is, they're probably going to care a lot that it's done really well. These people are masters of the craft. They're going to expect this to be done with the same attention, love, and master of the craft that they bring to their things. And then you're like, and they're going to want something they probably trust, right? That they trust here. Okay, well, how can you start to do that? Okay, well, one thing was, I probably should give them the right to approve their class or not. Because that's good. And you're like, well, in the film industry, that's never done, right? But you're like, but that's going to make them feel safer about it, right? Two is, okay, I've never filmed anything in my life. How do I bring people onto the project that have, that they're going to trust? So we brought on, it was so nice of them and so kind, Jay Roach, who is the director of Meet the Parents, Austin Powers. I mean, from the highest grossing film directors of all time. He offered help. And then I met Bill Guttentag, who won 2 Oscars for film directing for Docs. And all of us, okay, well, if they're super an idea and they're open to being involved in it, that's going to bring trust. How do I use the investors I got to bring trust? And then a lot in the beginning, the same thing we talked about, seed investing. Like the first, I remember one of the first to say yes, and I think the first we shot was James Patterson, the best-selling author in the world. James, I mean, this was cold emailing. James Patterson wanted to meet. Like, he wanted to suss us out. And so, like, a lot of the same things he's investing, he's like, am I gonna trust? You know, I don't know. We had 3 or 4 people on the team at that point, right? Am I gonna trust these folks? So those first, I mean, you know, James Patterson, one of the early ones was Serena Williams. I mean, that was faith in the team and the idea, right? And I owe a lot.
But it's just amazing. I love it, because so many people will think, how am I ever going to get James Patterson? They kind of not putting him on a pedestal. And what you said, which I think originally I had read and I read it a bunch of times, because it's Dale Carnegie book, where it's talk about, if you really want to talk to people and they want to, what are you offering them? What are you giving them? And it really is amazing, though, that you understanding that. But then there's so many people who are like, would never even send the email, would never follow up again. And here you are, James Pat. What did that feel like when you had that first, were you like blown away yourself? Like, wow.
I was walking in Santa Monica and I get a call on my cell phone from a number I don't recognize. And for some reason I answer it, which like nowadays you would never, because I'm spam called. And the guy goes, hi, this is James Patterson. And I was so unsmooth. I was like, the author? And I'm like, oh, it's a pleasure to hear from you. He's like, well, and I was like, maybe I said, I'm surprised to hear from you. And he's like, I'm a surprising guy. And I was like, okay. I was like, yeah, what's going on? He's like, I saw your proposal. The timing works. I'm interested. And I would love to talk more about it. And I'm like, oh my God. And then in my head, I'm like, how do I know this is really James Patterson? Is somebody playing a prank on me, right? What is it? And then, you know, he introduced us to his law firm and we went to spend time with him. But I mean, I think he was still in shock. I mean, the first time we got a yes, I actually had tears because, I mean, literally probably for a year and a half, people have been saying, this is impossible. This is never going to work. And even though I believed it was, there's a part of you that starts to let that creep in a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And there were tears like, hell yeah, I knew it, right? And then that gives you fuel for the next time when, like, it's not going to go your way, right?
I love that. So was there a period when you kind of hung out your shingle and started the business? Did it take a while? It sounds like you said a year and a half, like to really ramp up to just getting your first kind of instructors.
Oh yeah. I mean, it took a while. I mean, to think of the idea and then once you're kind of honing the idea to push it, this is why it's important to me that you come up and you figure out what are the core things you have to do in the business. And so that you can work on those things at the same time, because there is some things in entrepreneurship that you do actually have to wait for. Right. And so if I send one cold email, I can't every hour send it to the same person, right? Like, you got to give it a couple of days, et cetera. So, you know, you want to be working on those other things. And I think one of the things that was rarer about us, you know, we raised 3 rounds of funding before we launched. That is very rare. And lots of people did not like that idea. And I stuck to my guns on it because I knew this goes back to thinking what these instructors need to want. They want to make sure that their brand is protected, that they're going to look good, the classes are going to be really good. And so it was worth it to wait until we can make sure it was going to be great. But that was hard because lots of people are like, why go, right?
Yeah, right. You're getting that's such a tough thing from the investors. But one of the things you guys have done so well in understanding celebrities and just people who have at the top of their craft, you need, they want it. It's got to look good. And you guys just everything. And obviously I've used the site and noticed that it's done so incredibly well. And even from some of the video ads, and I mean, you could really, you just get a sense, and I am sure that that had helped. And I'm glad you stuck to your guns there. You start lining up some of these folks. Was there that nerve-wracking part? Now, look, the other side of this, I got to go get these customers. I mean, I've got Martin Scorsese here. Like, what if 20 people sign up? You know, how was that? What was that like?
I mean, so, you know, one of the hypotheses I had to prove was what were people going to be interested in. So we try to pull people, show them mocks of the site, try to gain that, our own confidence in it before ever, you know, doing it. Then it's launch day. And, you know, I've been working on this now for years, probably, a long time.
Yeah.
And this has been my life. And I think, and this is, you know, a trap we all fall into as entrepreneurs, whatever we're working on, we assume the rest of the world cannot wait to see this. And one of our early employees, I remember, he got me an extra phone charger because he's like, your phone's going to be off the hook, right? And I expect, you know, first day sales are going to be huge. We're going to get tons of press. You know, the first day will be 10x the other days, and then it'll come down, and then hopefully we'll start ramping up. We get first day sales. It is way under what I thought. Way under. I get pretty down. So I'm like, if this day is 10x and tomorrow is a tenth of this, I went home that day and like, I had tears. I'm not a big crier. I told you I cried like when we got the first doctor, but I probably didn't cry between then and then. And I called my folks, I remember, and they're like, David, you got to put a brave face on. You got a team. I was like, what am I going to do? Not only the employees, we probably had like 15 employees then. Got to go, these top stars put their necks on the line in part because their faith in me. And like, and go the next day and I go out in the office and there's a guy in our paid marketing team. He's a big smile on his face. I'm like, everything good? He's like, everything's great. I'm like, why? He's like, this is going to be a huge business. I'm like, sorry, what? And he's like, have you seen the CACs I'm getting? We can scale this. This is tons of demand. Whoa. And the next day was above the first day. And then like, and you're like, wait, if second day has more sales, wait, hold on. Maybe I misunderstood this. Right. And then, you know, sales over time were increasing. You're like, oh, if the first day is like your worst day and it goes up, and so I think probably the first day I thought this business was never going to work when we launched. The second day I thought it was going to be a big business.
That's amazing. And then were there starting there, right? The back first, second day, which I love that, how you're thinking this. You wait, not that it's terrible, but it's one day you go home, you're so pissed, you're, and then all of a sudden it's the roller coaster of an entrepreneur, right? Yep. Like you're so yep. down, you get a deal, you're so up, but you get that second day. And then I'm sure what happens, I'd like to ask you about, but what were the biggest, do you recall the biggest challenges in those early days? And was there ever a time you were like, I don't know if this is going to work? Or was it after that second day that you were like, we definitely have something?
I think after the second day, I knew we had something, but I didn't know, I wasn't 100% sure how big yet, right? And so there definitely were days where, dark days that you like doubt it. You're like, did we reach our potential? Like, is that it? Like, got it. And then you have to work the problem, right? And you like have to really work it and figure out like, okay, am I just being oversensitive? Am I being over-responsive to this thing? Okay, people don't like this. What is it they don't like? And you have to make adjustments along the way. And I think that mentality, you start to get trained at. They're like, bad stuff will happen. You're going to feel down about it, but it's going to be okay because you're going to get through it. And you just start to the point now where like, for me to get down about the business has to be something real, very bad. Because at this point, there's been tons of things and we are able to get through it and prove it and kind of excel. And you need a team that is okay with that and in the trenches. And those people over time change. The people you want in the trenches with you for, you know, your first year compared to your second or third year might not be the same people. And that's okay. But you need the people that are open to being that at that stage.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Was there a moment when you were like, not, hey, this is going to work like on that second day, but saying, I've really built a brand that is going to be around for a long time. And that as long as I keep doing what I'm doing, like that moment, was there that moment yet? And I always ask entrepreneurs, like, but did you have that where, wow, we've really done this. I feel like a success.
We achieved a scale, you know, I dreamed about, but I don't feel that way yet. I think there's more for us to achieve. I think we're still in the first innings of it. So no, I don't feel that way. I don't think I'll ever feel that way, to be honest. And I think that's part of the role of an entrepreneur and a CEO is your job changes all the time and nobody tells you how or when it's changing. Yeah. And your job is to see around the bend as much as you can. And you start figuring out, okay, to do that, there's a certain point where you are doing all the work. There's a certain point where like you're trying to find people to do a bunch of the work and you're helping them. Point where you're finding them and they know more than you do, right? And there's times now where you get out of the way and your job is just to basically clear the path for them. And I think one of the things I realized, and everybody's different, they got to find their thing. I like working with people that don't think the same way I do. Now, there are pros and cons. So we have a team of people that come that have won Emmys, folks that did not go to school, people that have PhDs, brand folks, engineers, a whole mix of folks. I love people that don't think the same way because that means like, A, you learn a tremendous amount. When you talk in debate, they kind of show you the whole chessboard because they're showing you parts that you didn't know about or think about. The hard part, if you're not on top of process and helping to make sure they work together, things take longer because you're not aligned in your way of thinking. So you have to put much more effort into norms, into process, into team bonding, all that stuff. But if you do that, in the hard days you have, the times you're stuck, somebody in your room, A, probably has already seen that problem before, or will have ideas and solutions that you never even thought of, right? And so, yeah, I don't know. That's part of the fun for me.
No, I totally get that. How did COVID change or how did it affect Masterclass?
In a bunch of ways. I mean, number one, I remember when the news started hitting about this stuff, I think we were one of the first companies to try everybody to work from home and shut down. And the reason goes back to what we just said. On our executive team, I remember we met on a Sunday and there were two people on the team that never agree on risk tolerance. Never, ever agree. One who's always risk-taking, one who's always very safe and conservative. And they both agreed that this was going to be bad. And you're like, they both agree. I will bet on that outcome, right? And that really helped us be ahead, really very ahead of the curve because the thought at the time was like, it's going to all be okay. And then what I did the same process as you do, is I called different people who don't think like I do and have extreme points of view and have seen a lot. And one of them was the former CEO of GE. And he had been through three macro shocks. And I asked him his advice. And he's like, one of the things you have to do is come up with your list of principles of what's most important to you, which was easy for us because number one was health of our employee base. Number two, he said, was you have to hold two different truths in your head at the same time. That was like a big lesson for me. We as a species are very bad at that. We actually resist that. We want things to be clear and like predictable and understandable. And so the two different truths that we held was that this is going to be really bad for, it's going to be really bad for the world and really bad for us. And so how do we create plans for that? The other truth was, hey, this is going to be really bad for the world, but can we do something to help? Can we be part of help? People are going to be home. They're going to want to learn. They're going to want to grow that. And so we built two different kind of plans and operating on the safe one, the things that are going to go bad for us too, but you know, with an eye on the other one too. And what we saw was what COVID did, at least in our space, was acted as an accelerant of trends we already, but already thought were true. People love to learn. People want to be in charge of their own learning. People love to learn about more than one thing. And online learning is allows you to learn anywhere in your house, anytime you want. There's really a big pro to it. So we saw for us, it was an accelerant for the whole business is what we ended up seeing.
Yeah, I you know, that's what I was thinking just from that standpoint. And obviously the world's shutting down. Everyone now starts to understand how to use technology that they, maybe a lot of people may have, I know myself, but now I can operate most technology, whether it's WebEx, Zoom, like, and I think, and I thought for you, especially for your business, rather, that this might be an incredible time because, you know, I guess, people do. They want to learn. And I just thought that that might be the case, which is great because it's accelerated things. Obviously, for the world, we want to get back to normal. And for you, what are the other avenues? Have you thought, you know, it's online learning for the most part now, not just any online learning with the best in the world. Yeah. What are some of the other areas? Have you thought about expanding and doing other things with the business?
Yeah, I mean, all the time. But I think one of the most important things is figuring out, every business book will give you advice that like what you need to do is focus. And you're like, oh, that sounds so great. That sounds so reassuring. But then like your next question is like, well, focus on what? Right? Like, and that's a hard thing. And I think one of the hardest things for entrepreneurs is figuring out what are those things to focus on, because you can't do everything. So in the core business, there's just lots of room for expansion in the fields we're in, all the features on the site, ways we can help drive you to learn more, right? There's tons of things for us to do. Then you say, okay, what are the other things that we do want to invest in trying, right? So one big part for us is international expansion. We already, you know, our classes are only in English, but lots of our users come from outside of the United States. We do want to make, you know, this aligns our mission and make, you know, trying to help but make it possible for anybody to learn from the best. That means there's more people. We are seeing growth, a tremendous growth in the B2B side of the business, right? And so thinking about that, I want to do more for kids, right? There's tons of things, but it's really, we try to keep a really tight list of here's the things that we're working on. And I think one of the things I found really helpful is also sharing a list of things that we are not working on this year and sharing it with everybody in the whole company, because one of the worst things to do that can destroy you is that everybody's focused on 100 different things.
Yeah. It's so important as an entrepreneur. And I'm a kind of, my partner's very linear and he'll, you know, knows how to focus and fun. And I'm very big idea all over the place. And that could really hurt you in a lot of ways. It sounds like, you know, what you're going after, what you're focusing on. I love the aspect of kids because I do think that so much of what they learn in school today, I mean, there's very important things, but there's so much they don't learn. I was talking to someone, Alex Rodriguez, and he was talking about how he tries to teach his kids a financial lesson every day. And he's someone who never went to, he didn't graduate, he didn't go to college, right? And I was just thinking like financial literacy and so many other areas that are so important down the road, but yet they're not in any school curriculums. And I'm curious if that's on, you know, kind of some of the things that might be coming up or on the table or...
That might be.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that part of it. So for you now, just in the little time we have left in running this business and thinking back to when you took that risk, how's it feel at this point going? Because I loved how you explained it, terrifying. Like, how does it feel for you right now, day to day? And I know we're in a difficult time in this, but from a standpoint of having done this and built this business. Yeah.
There are amazing days to it. And I was talking to somebody the other day. This is both like the best and the hardest job I've ever had. I put on weight. I lost friends. I experienced a level of stress and a consistency in that stress that I've never experienced before doing this. And you doubt yourself. I mean, some of the really difficult parts.
Yeah.
But there are also parts that are a level of self-confidence builds, level of understanding the impact that you can have. You can have on other people in the world, days that you see that impact and how you change somebody's life. And just then the people you meet, the conversations you have and what you learn that are just once you experience, you're like, you can't live without.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And made amazing friends from it too. Right. And so, and work with the best people I've ever worked with in my entire life. So I try to lean into those feelings of gratitude, but there are also days where, you know, you're like, God damn it.
Yeah.
So trying to always remember when you're in one to just remember that the other exists too.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the fact you said gratitude and the gratitude to be working with so many of these people, to be doing something that was so important for your family, for your grandmother, for everything that kind of was part of her DNA and life and what she went through. And to now be putting together, have this business that is teaching the world and anyone, right? In teaching everyone. There's, and as you said, international, the expansion. And it just must be such an incredible feeling. And I hope you continue to grow this business. I'm sure we're going to see so many unique and different things. I have to tell you again, coming from the business and at least from the not the the side of not online learning, but the side of doing events, live events and experience, seeing what you built, I was blown away. And I just wish you the best of luck. And it's so great to see what a good guy you are, because it makes me feel a hell of a lot better knowing that you took this idea and you ran with it and you did this and you're doing really well.
Thanks so much. That really means a lot. All right. It was and thanks for having me as a guest.
I'm always appreciate it.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.